Hello, this is Jill Burridge here, and if you're a regular listener, you may know that we're doing a series of interviews at the moment to highlight the amazing work that some of our local charities do in the community. Today, I'm talking to Stuart Faulkner, who founded and runs a charity called the Ollie Foundation, and Ollie is in capital letters, and it stands for One Life Lost is Enough. The aim of the foundation is to prevent suicides amongst young people, teenagers, and the under 30s. Stuart, thank you very much for joining me in the studio today. Very sadly, you have direct experience of a young person, your son Morgan. He committed suicide at the age of 15 in May 2015,
and that's right,
just over 2 years ago. Did you have any sense that he was in a dark place before he committed suicide?
No, none whatsoever. Absolutely no idea he would ever contemplate such a drastic event. So it happened completely out of the blue.
Yes, for sure. He was about to sit exams. Mm. Did you feel that that might have been part of the difficulty or not?
It could have been, but I have no idea. I didn't have any inclination that he had anything that was really bothering him. But it could have been his exams. It could have been a number of reasons. You just don't know. But the point being is that if he was 15 and had those feelings of almost powerlessness in a way that led him to feel that that he didn't feel like he could cope with the feelings and emotions that he had, then I'm wondering if that was the thing that made him think that actually I don't want to have to contend with these feelings and emotions anymore.
So I was just thinking, though, that as you were talking, that the fact that you can't find any reason for him taking such tragic actions makes it all the harder to come
Does
to
it?
Terms with. Well,
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Well, I think if he'd have left a note, had he said, oh, the reason why I've done this is because I'm fearful of my exams, is because I got dumped by my girlfriend, is because of this, that and the other, I'd have still wished, why couldn't you just tell me?
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
So whether I know or don't know the reasons why he did it, for me personally, I just have to learn to live with the fact that he's not here. And I do my best to try and raise awareness of this, what I perceive to be a real issue in our communities.
I think it is a real issue. It's not one that is widely perhaps acknowledged or discussed,
not.
Is it?
No. Talking about child suicide is horrific. No one ever talked to me about it, and so I feel like I was in the dark in a way. So when Morgan did die, and I did a lot of research, and then learnt that actually suicide's the biggest killer of men under 35. I didn't know that 3 to 4 young people a day are taking their own life.
Mm. So what made you decide that you would found, the Ollie Foundation in order
I just didn't see how I could go back to working the way I had done before. A bit of joy has gone out of my life now for obvious reasons. So I felt it was really important to try and channel my energies into something that was worthwhile. And I met a couple of people who also lost their children to suicide. And we just felt, look, three of us are sitting here. None of us knew this was going to happen. Now we could carry on with our lives and not so much pretend it hasn't happened, but keep our heads down and just carry on with our lives, or we could do something about it. So we decided to do something about it, and we did some research and decided to sort of set up a charity. Simple as that, really.
You took that decision to set up another charity.
Mm.
There are charities
there
working in this field, most notably, I think, Papyrus, which is a national charity, which offers sort of support and counselling.
Well, when Morgan died, they were the first charity that I contacted. And in fact, I had a great meeting with the chief exec, Jed Flynn. He turned out to be a sort of mentor to me in a way, because when he started talking about some of the work they were doing in their communities, I felt there was an affinity there with me and that I could do some work with them. But in time, it sort of dawned on us as a group that actually it might make more interest for us to actually train our own trainers and have trainers affiliated to us in St Albans, so that we had control over what they did, when they did it. And actually, because I work in HR, I've got a bit of an understanding about structure of business. So I felt that it was probably in our better interest in order to create a structure that was able to support our local community. And if and when it grows bigger, then so be it. But as long as we've got the structure in place, it'd be easier to do so.
So what sort of training and how did you get your inspiration for the way you were going to train people?
Well, it was through Papyrus, really, was understanding that the training that they offered comes in two formats. There's the half-day course called Safe Talk, and that gives people the skills and the confidence to have a conversation with someone about a topic like suicide and not shying away from it and not being fearful of using the word. and actually not being fearful of saying, are you thinking of taking your own life? Because in a lot of cases, it's sometimes a relief. And so having the Safe Talk training gives someone the confidence to have that open dialogue and hopefully give someone the forum to be able to talk about what's going on for them. But the Assist training is a two-day course that's more intensive, and that's more to do with how do we keep people safe. You know, it's all very well having a conversation with someone and saying, you know, thanks for telling me that, but I'll see you next week. Or, you know, you can't do that. You've actually got to take some responsibility for their well-being and their care at that particular moment in time. So the Assist is a much more intensive course about a wider topic of suicide. So it was Papyrus that came up with the training. And then, as I said, because they were a little bit further afield, and we looked around to see if there were any other Assist trainers in the local area, couldn't actually find anyone. And that made it easier for us then to think, well, rather than relying on outsourcing the training to other parts of the country, why don't we just train our own trainers?
And when you've got teachers trained and they're back in their school environment, what signs are they looking for amongst the students that might indicate to them that they're vulnerable?
I think it's just changes in behaviour that, you know, people are very good at hiding their own feelings and emotions. So it could just be a subtle change in demeanour or a subtle change in behaviour. But I think the point is not to ignore changes and actually to be not to shy away from the topic. But I don't want to say there's any one sign. I don't think there are any signs necessarily that someone could be displaying, which is why part of the reasons for the charity is not just to provide the training, but actually to raise awareness about the topic of suicide so it doesn't become a horrible subject. You know, sadly, when my son died, I don't want to be critical of any of the of anybody involved in the aftermath of that. But I do wonder and think, you know, how was that communicated to the whole community? You know, what did all the other parents know about it? You know, how did they contend with it? There were a couple of suicides a few years ago, and me at the time as a parent thought, thank God that wasn't me, because that would never happen to me, because my kids wouldn't do that. So I was in a little bit of denial myself. And probably at the time, my kids weren't at risk at that particular moment. But again, I guess in this day and age, we're all sort of so busy with our own lives and our own pressures that maybe we're not totally aware of what it is that our kids are feeling at that particular moment. So in other words, I think it's just about opening up a dialogue with a group of people, really, or a community, and not shying away from it, and ensuring that, you know, if people are talking openly about suicide, you never know, people might be more inclined to say, yeah, do you know what, I feel pretty down myself. I went to a group of national citizen kids. So these kids sign up for this National Citizen Service Award. And for a month, they have to get involved in community and fundraising and charity and volunteer projects. And I went over to Hemel, actually, to speak to a group of kids. And there's about 40 of them in the class. And said, out of interest, you know, without naming anybody, how many of you know someone that has self-harmed or has suffered from a mental health issue? 80% of the hands went up. I asked them again, how many of you have been affected by suicide or exposed to it? 80% of the hands went up. So that's 80% of people who have been affected by a suicide. We all know what the word means. We all know what the word suicide means. But we'll all have a very different interpretation of it, a very different perception of what it means to us as individuals. And that will be based on our own personal experiences. And that's where I think we have to then talk about suicide as an ideology and try and create an environment where people understand all the implications of it. You know, someone once said to me, I'm sorry for your mishap. You know, I didn't get offended by that, but it dawned on me really quickly. She didn't know what to say. She didn't know how to have a conversation with me about something as horrible as what I'd been through. But if we don't do that, if we don't have these conversations, then we'll all continue to be in a little bit of denial and assume it's someone else's problem. I didn't realize until a month ago that there were 700 murders last year in this country, but there's over 6,000 suicides. And when you think about those numbers, you know, this is happening now. This is a problem now. So I don't know what, the wider community think about it. But if we don't talk about it, then there'll other people. Other people will be vulnerable. They'll feel there's nowhere to go and will feel that it's the only option open to them.
What sort of take up have you had from schools around and about?
It's been a mixed bag. I think Sandringham School have been very supportive. Obviously, they were. That was a school that Morgan went to, and they've been great. They've allowed us to conduct a lot of our training sessions there as well. The take-up from a lot of the schools, you know, some has been better than others. You know, I don't want to be critical of those that haven't, because I guess in their world, they don't believe it's a problem that they need to be addressing. Or they probably have, as far as they're concerned, taken steps to address maybe the mental health of young people. So some schools better than others, but I accept as well. They've all got their own agendas. They've got budgetary constraints. They've got targets to hit as well. It might be easier to let people go out for a half-day course. It might be harder to let people go for a two-day course. Again, none of that's really... I don't want to lose sleep about those sorts of things because ultimately it'd be down to the schools themselves to decide if they want it. And the more stories we hear in the local press about sad stories, I think encourages more people and more schools to think, crikey, if we don't do something, then we're letting ourselves be quite vulnerable to our young people being affected by it.
Because your aim is to train teachers so that it can be incorporated as part of the national curriculum?
Well, in an ideal
into
world,
PSE,
yeah.
Or,
yeah, I mean... I feel,
I mean, that's personal and social education.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of other suicide charities out there, and there are lots of other people out there that have more of a sort of strategic slant on the bigger picture that covers the country. Again, I don't like to be critical of other organisations, but, you know, I don't want to be held back by red tape. I've worked in the NHS, I've worked in local councils at times, and sometimes the wheels have two speeds, which is slow and stop, because it just takes too long for things to happen. And it dawned on me as well that actually we're probably influencing and affecting more change currently now by just carrying on with what we're doing. And if other people want to catch up with us in a way, or if other people want to accommodate what we're doing and absorb what we're doing and try and encourage other people to adopt what we're trying to implement, then so be it. But in the meantime, we may as well just crack on with what we're doing. And certainly, you know, the take-up has been incredible. And the more momentum we build and the more awareness we raise, the more parts of different communities we start to touch, people then come forward and want to help and want to support us. And you start to understand how suicide affects communities. You see, when I started the charity sort of a year and a half ago now, I went into schools with a very much a sort of fixed idea that all I'm there to do is talk about the training. Whereas I think now, a year further on, I've got a year's further knowledge of the landscape. I've got a year's further knowledge of running a charity, of understanding schools, of understanding other charities, of other services that are out there. All of that knowledge that I take now when I go into schools is much more relevant to things like, what is your strategy? Do you have an overall strategy? Yes, you can train your teachers to have safe talk and assist training, but you also need to teach your young people resilience and well-being training. You need to do that. You need to help them understand their own mental health. And by that same token, you should teach your teachers as well about good mental health awareness and creating dialogue and creating forums and opportunities for people to express openly their mental health and well-being. The third thing I think schools should also take on board is access to counselling services. My understanding as well is if there is an issue, schools will refer on to a counselling service, whether it be CAMHS, whether it be Youth Talk or any other service that can offer those sorts of services. But then the school's responsibility has ended to an extent. You know, once it's in the hands of CAMHS, then, you know, the school has done its bit. But CAMHS, as I understand it, can have quite a long waiting list. So if there's a long waiting list, what happens in the interim? So my view is that schools should therefore have a wider responsibility for a strategy that covers all of those things and even bereavement services. Again, one of the things that I've learned myself is that, you know, if you're affected by a death, you can grieve immediately because the shock is so much. But I'm not convinced you're necessarily over it. And it could take months, maybe years, for you to finally come to terms with that type of death. And I wonder, again, people who may have been affected by Morgan's death, how it would affect them, not necessarily at the time, maybe not even that year, but maybe the year after, 2 years later, 3 years later, when they themselves got a difficult time. And then at that particular moment where they're suffering from the issues that any young person could be suffering from, you wonder then if that's the moment when they start to feel a little bit vulnerable and think, crikey, now I know how Morgan felt. Now I know why he did what he did. Now I can see that it's an option, because now that person's created their own relationship with suicide. Again, based on their own experiences and their own exposure to it.
As you were talking, I was thinking that probably the most important thing that you take into schools is your personal story, your relationship with Morgan.
I'm reluctant to talk about my personal relationship with Morgan because I don't want to necessarily engender sympathy for me, because I don't necessarily, not so much don't appreciate it, I still have to contend with the fact he's not here.
But that's what I mean, that you are the person who has been through the whole trauma.
I can talk to anybody about the topic. I'm reluctant to talk to young people about it because that's what the trainers are there to do. It's the teachers that are trained to talk to young people. I'm not a mental health expert. All I try and do is create a forum that can permeate into the different parts of the communities, whether it's schools, whether it's youth clubs, You know, anybody really, there's any organization that feels that they could benefit from our training, then do it. And I can help facilitate that as opposed to being a champion for good mental health, because I'm not a mental health expert.
You're a man with a mission.
Man on a mission.
So, Stuart, if you had to sum it up, what's your immediate objective for the future?
Well, I think it, obviously, for, as far as the Ollie Foundation is concerned, it's getting as many people trained in our Safe Talk and Assist training and creating awareness of this topic. But on a more strategic note, Ollie Foundation is represented in Public Health Hertfordshire's steering group. They have a suicide prevention steering group, which is split into 9 different subsections, of which there is one for young people, I think there's one for older people, one for medication, mental health, and I'm on the group for young people. And we're in discussions about how we could possibly create a minimum standard kite mark. And so this kite mark would be for a school to demonstrate that they've taken their responsibilities seriously, not just about the training that we offer, but also about mental health and resilience training for young people and teachers, but plus access to counselling services and access to bereavement services, and also being conscious of the fact that parents need to be aware of this topic as well. So we're hoping in time that that kite mark will be a standard for all schools. What we have been really amazed and delighted by is the amount of schools that have chosen us as their charity of the year. And by doing so, they can then raise funds for us, and we will then donate all that money back to training their teachers for free. So it's actually a win-win for all concerned. One, they raise funds and awareness by talking about the topic. We will then go in and train as many teachers as they want in those vital skills. So that's been a real lucky boost for us. Any schools out there that fancy nominating us, please give us a call.
And you want the parents involved too?
Of course. Of course. We've got our first Safe Talk session for parents coming up soon. And I'm delighted about that, because I think prior to now, it's always been schools that have been the recipients. We've just started to make some inroads into sort of youth groups and football clubs and rugby clubs as well. So we just feel like slowly, slowly, we can start to, you know, collaborate with other organisations and create a county that's suicide-free.
Thank you very much indeed, Stuart Faulkner, for talking to us.
Thank you.